The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast, Joshua Adam William Arvath with the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Johnson.
How goes it?
It is going good, Joel. So, we just got a chance to see Omega Man, a part of this kind of, what's the name of the pod?
It is in Great Valley Nation. It is basically Canada's equivalent to 30 for 30,
yeah. And I saw a little bit of the Donovan Bailey one,
yeah,
which is really good. But this was just, as far as a documentary on a wrestler and what we had, you and I had been anticipating this, there had been a rumor, what we kind of heard in December, maybe, I think?
Yeah, I think it was around December, maybe it was January, because there was a rumor coming out that HBO was doing a Kenny doc.
Yes, and we're like, okay, because there was a guy saying he did the music for it.
Yeah, and it was an HBO doc, but as it turns out, it was for Bell Media, which is up here in Canada.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was on TSN, and it was part of the Engraved on a Nation.
And this one got a lot of promotion, especially during March Madness. The ads were all over the place, probably the second or third most known commercial, so it had a lot of positive buzz coming in. Kenny had done a lot of interviews this past few days, good and bad. Not bad on him, just a little bit awkward for some of the people interviewing him.
I feel bad for wrestlers, because you hear some of the questions, and some people do their research or wrestling fans and handle in very just normal manner. There's other people, when they hear the word pro wrestling, it's like they start to move really weird in their chair, and it's like, so, you're a wrestler. It's kayfabe that you guys, and there are definitely a few interviews that were kind of a little like, ew.
I think you saw that between this Kenny one and then a little bit with the women at ESPN this past week as well.
Well, you saw the title card that they had for Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
That was dumb.
Yeah. So, as far as Kenny goes, I thought he handled his interviews really well, but as far as this doc, it's really interesting. So, it's an hour documentary, I guess 40 minutes with commercials.
Yeah.
And there's stuff on here I did not think they would show, just from knowing stuff about Kenny's past. And there's a story of Kenny's career that you could talk about. And this could really have been, like you and I were saying beforehand, this could have been a two-hour documentary. Not a problem. Go ahead.
There's so much within Omega's story and his journey. It felt like the nice thing was it was... This is almost like your meal to introduce someone to something. Like this is that plate that you give someone that has a little bit of everything. You introduce them to everyone, and then if they really enjoy it, they're back for more. And I think that's what this hour-long doc did, was it was very much that, here you go, here's a little bit on Omega, and you get to see what they're really about. Like that's the one thing that this doc drove home really hard, was this is what wrestling is to Okada, Omega, like the guys that help, that you followed. And you hear Meltzer describe it really well. And you also hear just Omega and his story with Ibushi, which is a massive driving point for this doc.
Well, and that's the thing I thought it did really good. Like, for example, one storyline that wasn't in here was the kind of formation with the Bucks and the Elite. I was a little surprised the Bucks weren't in this, but I don't think it hurt it. I thought it did a very good, like you said, it was kind of like a nice, not an appetizer, but a nice story setting of, if you follow Kenny Omega's career, it's a kid that grew up, loved wrestling, and then got a chance to go to WWE, didn't work out very well, kind of returned to give up, took this opportunity in Japan.
The AJ match is the same.
The AJ match, yeah, kind of re-energized his love of wrestling, right? But then he goes to Japan, and then thinks he's only going to be there for a month, ends up being there for 9-10 years. Then kind of meets up with Ibushi, and then this slow turn to becoming something bigger in Japan, and then join the Bullet Club, and that helping him rise up in Japan, then having this big feud with Okada. It was like these bullet points that you and I were to tell non-wrestling fans of, like, okay, give me like 5 things I need to know about him. Pretty much all of them except for the Elite was part of this.
Yeah, and that was a little bit of a shame, but I mean, it's funny because you see... you really see the growth and progression of pro wrestling. Because you see when Kenny is in Deep South, and it just doesn't work.
Fighting Heath Slater.
Yeah, fighting Heath Slater. And then him having the match with AJ, he's like, it's a good thing you quit that crap promotion, WWE, after signing a new contract and getting a new puppy.
New puppy.
And then him going to DDT and
the
having...
craziness.
Oh, man, it makes me want to watch more DDT, just to see the pure madness of all of that.
Well, there was stuff from there. I didn't think they showed the match with the little girl.
That is amazing. That's the one clip that, as a wrestling fan, people have sent to me. Like, have you seen this? I'm like, oh, Kenny Omega's great. And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, just watch it and enjoy it.
And then they showed Ibushi and the doll.
They showed Ibushi and the doll, and they showed the firecrackers. And you see his chest is all, like, has ash on it. Like, it's all, like, it's all kind of dirty after him shooting himself with the fire, Roman candle, is it called?
Something like that, yeah.
And him just shooting himself. And they showed all that, and that's the other really good thing about this doc, is other than not talking about the Elite, it's not like the Elite thing was hidden, but it had every point for Kenny's career. It didn't hide anything. It wasn't embarrassed by anything. It didn't try to change history. And I mean, you know, that's really common in wrestling. We don't try to alter history or change the story at all, do we?
No. I thought, too, the interesting thing coming in here was, would Kenny come out?
Yeah.
Which never was, but they did this very interesting thing with his parents, and then kind of with one of his friends, of his mom being like, I don't know. And his dad was like, I don't know.
His mom just seemed very kind of clueless on everything. Yeah. So either that was...
on purpose?
Yeah. Acting, or she really has no idea?
I thought it was, I kind of liked it in a way, that it's kind of kept in this, under this kind of coat of silence of, who knows if they're together, who cares if they are. And I kind of like that I can't remember the girl's name, but she, the culture critic?
Yeah.
She did a tremendous job of kind of being a narrator through this, and really, there's a video online that kind of talks about Coda and Kenny and their rise and how the simplicity of great storytelling is done in wrestling. And so that was kind of that into this doc, I felt like. But she did a good job of navigating that part of it. And it told this really cool story with all of that. And I was really happy to get Coda to talk, because you and I joke about Coda. He's this madman and he's a flight risk. But his words in this were very poignant and very educated and really meant a lot. And it's like, really haven't heard Coda in a setting, really, because he speaks Japanese. So if he's done like a long interview or a podcast or anything, I'm not going to listen to it because I can't, because it's in Japanese. And hearing everything that he would say about what him and Kenny were, or the matches, was like really important to hear. Same with Okada's as well.
Yeah. It just adds that another level to it. And you just... I thought the ending of it ending at All In was a very fitting end.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a very, very good point, because that really harkens back to why Kenny got into this, why Kenny has been on this journey. And it's to change the world, the wrestling world, him and Ibushi. And they talked about that at the end, that they're changing the world together. Not right now, but I'd like to think that the Golden Lovers will be together again.
And they tell this story, you know, like how wrestling has... had characters of LGBT, and it's kind of been mocked. Gorgeous George was this overly flamboyant man. Adrian Adonis probably was one of the worst until Orlando Jordan in TNA, which to me was the most embarrassing.
Yeah.
If anyone remembers that, I'm not going to go through it, but it involves a lot of lotion and the worst part about that is Orlando Jordan is a gay man, and probably was the first time I had heard a wrestler come out was Orlando Jordan, and I don't know if that was on him for that idea, or is wrestling pushing it? I guess Goldust is to a degree as well. And then you hear the stuff with Razor or Ahmed. Was it Razor or Ahmed?
Ahmed
did.
Yeah.
Razor was a little weird with it too. So, and just the character, like the overtop of cartoonish characteristics of the, especially with Adonis, was bad. Like Goldust was whatever. Goldust wasn't great for the portrayal. But Adonis was the worst, and then the stuff they did with Piper was really bad. And then you have these two guys, they're kissing and everything like that, and it just kind of goes into, like, when they got back, I was crying when I saw them come back, and just like, oh, this is just a good story. This is a good story overall.
And that's the one thing that this doc does very well, and it's thanks to the narrator that helps kind of carry... I never felt like this documentary was rudderless. Like, it felt like it was just kind of floating out in the...
Yeah. You know,
it felt like everything had a purpose, and everything... Anytime they turned and they moved to something else, it led you to the next point. It felt very much like a very... It had great fluidity to it. It was shot incredibly well. The audio was good. There was never a point where you're like, oh, like crap, audio. The mixing on the audio sucks, or the camera cuts are weird. Why are you doing this? It felt like they had fluidity to it. And it was really neat to see some of these old New Japan matches. Like, mm-hmm. to see highlights from AJ and Kota, and seeing Nock and Kota.
Finn.
And then seeing Finn.
Asuka and DDT.
Yeah. Seeing...
Michael Nakasawa.
That's just going to be a whole podcast.
I like, too, that, you know, where this LGBT thing was, to a degree, I thought, like, they're going to hit really heavy on it. And maybe they did, but I didn't really notice it. It wasn't about this tag team being LGBT or whatever. It was just about it being a tag team, that these two care about each other deeply, and that's really all that mattered. But that it influenced, I don't know if influenced yet, but it really was a positive reflection on the LGBT community and really on affection of storytelling and how it can be used with the LGBT community going forward.
Yeah, and it never felt like it hinged on anything. Like, it was, there's one thing driving it. It felt like there were multiple things. It felt organically like a person. Like, you have multiple things that drive you, and it felt like this documentary did a really good job reflecting what drives Kenny Omega.
Yeah, so I guess we'll kind of go back to the beginning really quick here, and then we'll kind of go over a few more points, and then we'll get out of here on this. But so yeah, it kind of starts with him, what he grows up with, and saying, "I'm Tyson Smith," which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Kind of like hitting that point out there. And I love, and WWE does this really good in their documentaries too, of the younger tapes. And so getting to see him as a younger guy and getting to see his love for wrestling. We knew that he played hockey growing up.
Yeah. Well, he's a goalie, so explain some of the crazy things he's done. Yeah.
Bob Esna's his favorite player growing up for the Jets. And getting to kind of have this decision between hockey and wrestling, like we've seen from a lot of these Canadian players, like Jericho, Christian, Edge, have kind of been in that same circumstance as well. I think Christian was the closer for the good hockey players, I believe.
I have no
idea. But anyways, and then getting this chance to go to WWE, and then kind of being like, it was the land of the giants at that time, and it was in 06. And 06, you're looking at Punk in OVW,
yeah,
in a deep cell. But who else is there at that time, developmental wise? And who's the bigger small guy other than Ray on that roster is what I'm trying to think about.
No one. The one thing that did bug me.
Noble, I guess.
Yeah. The one thing that did bug me about the doc, when they showed the Land of the Giants, they showed Batista, then they showed Flair, and then they showed Hogan.
Yeah.
And, like, Flair's a little bit of a smaller guy, was a smaller guy at the time. Hogan, that
wasn't there.
Yeah.
I would have showed Dave.
Cena. And Hunter.
Hunter, or you could have shown Matt Morgan at that time.
Yeah.
Matt Morgan was someone at that time that got pushed up and wasn't ready, but he was a big guy.
Yeah.
And that's, you could have shown that of... Here's this guy, Matt Morgan, wasn't ready, big guy came up. And who's another guy? Luther Reigns is that same time as well.
Yeah.
Big guy. Luther Reigns was not ready, came up. And then there's guys like Mark Jindrak who were athletic and big, but were also used, but were just kind
Chuck of...
Chuck Palumbo, Sean O'Hare are guys that are just up there. But
I'm just having flashbacks to...
Yeah, this is 06, right?
Yeah.
Bobby Lashley.
Yeah, Bobby Lashley was getting that big push then.
Yeah.
Because that was 06 would be WrestleMania 23, would it not?
That's 08.
Is that 08?
I believe so.
Because let me take a look at that Mania card. Because that's the one thing with Kenny.
That's when SmackDown is like kind of, maybe it's more, it was 06. 07 is 23.
Yeah, 07.
Because 06 is like, that's a SmackDown, for example, with like, that had Lashley, and that had Booker, and that had Batista on it. And then in the other show, you had some of the bigger guys. Like, Garrison Cade was a bigger guy as well. So it definitely were these, like...
So the smaller, Benoit was a smaller guy on that.
Yeah, so you have... In 06,
Benjamin kind of started to cool off in 06.
So you
RVD's
have,
a guy. He wins the Money in the Bank.
Evan Bourne there?
No. RVD...
Evan Bourne's there for ECW.
I don't know if ECW...
Punk is on ECW.
ECW hasn't quite...
Shannon Moore.
I'm just looking at some of the top matches. So, like, You've got Taker versus Henry. You've got Michaels versus McMahon. Mysterio versus Kurt.
So Ray's the main one.
Orton, yeah. And then you've got Cena and Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... It Kenny, like, you look at Kenny now, if that Kenny Omega was in NXT, he's not leaving.
No.
Because Hunter is like, ka-ching, this is jackpot.
Because
mm-hmm. you can see, even the one thing that impressed me about seeing some of the younger footage of Kenny was how well he moved and how crisp his moves
are. It's so much different than it's like letting age. It kind of put it to a transition of a guy that just came back to the NBA, whether he does good or not, is Jimmer Fredette. When he left the NBA was putting up. Average team was putting up 23s a game, and now the average team is putting 35 a game, which is much more to his game set of being a three-point shooter. And the equivalent of that is in 06, those cruiserweights, those guys doing those flashy moves aren't getting hired. So the Tyler Blacks and the Cesaros and stuff are kind of getting looked at, but they're not. Punk only gets signed because Payman wouldn't shut up.
Yeah.
And hey, Punk had more work in at that point than Kenny did, obviously,
yeah.
right? And with Kenny, they didn't really see anything. Like, yeah, we'll just serve you up to Matt Morgan or whoever the other big guy was down there at the time.
Yeah. And so then when that happens, he has a match with AJ.
Yeah.
That line from AJ is hilarious.
Yeah.
That is such a great line. I need a screenshot.
That's like 4 years after AJ has quits WWE because they lowball him on our contract, and he's a pretty big deal in TNA at this point.
Yeah.
Like, facing AJ at that point, AJ is one of the top 10 or 5 wrestlers in the world at that point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This little, badly lit indie show.
In Winnipeg, Manitoba,
yeah.
which is cold for anyone that doesn't...
Well, he was doing those shows for, like, PWA out here for a bit, too,
yeah.
at that point. So, yeah. But then, so that kind of turns things around. And I think that's the only time Kenny and AJ have ever fought, and maybe ever will.
I think they're going to touch again at some point.
It's just age for AJ now, right?
Yeah.
So that's huge. And then, yeah, the DDT stuff, which, I mean, we a long time ago did, it's not up anymore, but we reviewed that hotel with Coda thing, which I will leave that alone. But
ooh,
it just,
that's all I will say is that is not safe for work.
No. And seeing Asuka on here.
Yeah.
So with Kenny, was really, really cool. And just making Asuka look like more of a badass. And just making Kenny look like more of a progressive thinker as far as
yeah.
his industry.
Because you even see at a younger career, like a younger age, well before the Joey Ryans, before any of that really takes off and becomes big, he's already doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, Joey Ryan could have been doing that stuff at the time, but you just see him doing that now, and you see his train of thought and what he's doing. So it's not just like a guy that's something like, oh, this is the popular train to hop on. He's been thinking about this for a long time.
I think that's the thing that really hit on Kenny in this is the progressive thinking and the outright thinking of like, what can I do different and what can I do to really hit on things? And, you know, we know so much about Kenny now, like, as a guy that likes video game. And they showed some clips of him, like, hey, doing Hadoukens. But he doesn't really do them in his matches anymore.
No, he's progressed as a wrestler.
Yeah.
Anyone that's followed him from when he first... Like, my start with Omega is his debut at Wrestle Kingdom 9.
Yeah.
Wrestle Kingdom 9 or 10.
Yeah, whatever. That, and I was telling you that... We were saying, I'm like, that show changed... really my wrestling fandom.
Yeah.
And Kenny was a big part of that.
Because you see Omega. I remember seeing Omega and going, I really like this guy.
Yeah.
I really like him.
I was a little more numb.
Yeah. And it was like, I think I remember you saying that, oh, he's like in his late, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. WWE. I'm like, I like this guy.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, in that time, I'm still very much in my WWE mindset. I'm also a little bitter at that time too with Japan because Shelton had gone there in MVP and didn't hit it maybe the way I wanted to, and I saw MVP a little bit later in his 30s and he wasn't able to hit, so I'm like, why could Kenny Omega hit? My brain has obviously changed now as far as the industry in that time, and Kenny's a big reason why for everything he did, becoming the leader of the Bullet Club. And Kenny, I think they didn't tell there in there either, is when Nakamura, AJ, and the Good Brothers leave for WWE, Kenny is one of those main guys along with Okada and Naito that really took the ball and ran with it. And Okada and Kenny really being those two key pieces that when everyone's like, Nakamura's gone and AJ's gone, Japan's done. and Okada and Kenny really took the ball and run it. That's the only part maybe if I would have put anything in the dock is I would have maybe put that in. I was saying how they did the feud. I would have maybe added that quick of saying these guys left the territory and everyone thought the territory was done and then these two took the territory. Not only left it at the same playing level, but they took it to the next level.
And they arguably, Japan, say what you will about Japan now and some of the questions of where the book is going with Japan and especially losing a guy like Omega. You see what Kenny meant at that time, and that's absolutely a point that should have been.
Yeah.
Because that's huge, because arguably, when things change, you're like, oh, I don't know where Japan is now.
It wasn't really losing AJ, which was a big deal, because it was losing the big North American star. Then they lose the biggest Japanese draw. Yeah, with respect to Tana and Okada, especially Tana at that
point. I'd say he's probably two. Tana had some years of him kind of going down, so I think maybe Nock was ahead of him. Yeah. I'd have to check, brush up on my history. But losing both those and losing Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, which they'll be getting back soon enough anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just felt like, oh, there's a big void, and then they pulled the trigger with Kenny, and boy.
And Okada.
Okada was already.
Yeah, but he kind of just went to that. He really took the ball from Nock and took that next level.
Oh, yeah. Okada had, and I like that they touched on the reign that Okada had, because he had probably one of the greatest world title reigns in history.
Yeah, well, Meltzer called him the greatest New Japan champion of all time. I was like, that's high praise, and yeah. We'll save that for another podcast. I like, too, they kind of... I think, too, again, it's not things I think are negatives. Like, oh, you could have added that in, but you're stuck is you could have gone through the first Wrestle Kingdom match with Okada
yeah.
and Kenny, then that Dominion tie, and how Kenny was so close.
But the G1 win.
The G1 win, and how they're so close and so close. And they didn't touch on that, but it still worked when they did set up to a degree him and Okada having a rivalry. And when you saw Kenny get the win, it still mattered. But I think if they could have showed that loss at Wrestle Kingdom and then shown the tie and getting closer and closer, because that's another really good story to set there.
I would have hit on him versus Jericho.
Yeah.
Because that was a big deal for Japan at the time regardless. Mm-hmm. And I get the main story is him and Kota. But the other story, the main story to this is Kenny and him wrestling Jericho. Him being good enough to draw Jericho into Japan when Jericho was sworn up and down that the only place he'd ever wrestled is WWE. To sucker him into Japan and to help lead to eventually what would be AEW. I think that was another thing that they could have hit on. But I love seeing the reuniting of Kota and Kenny.
Oh, it was great. I think, too, it's if I was going to say with this doc, is this anyone? It's a Kenny Omega doc, but it's also kind of a Kota Ibushi doc.
Yeah.
In a sense, like, I know Kenny's the Canadian, and that's why it's engraved in the nation. It's focusing on Canadian athletes. But I think it's a story of Kenny and Kota.
Really, yeah, their relationship.
Because you even get the stuff of Kota in DDT for the most part with the doll and the Roman candles, and even when they go to the all-in part, they show his match just as much as they show the Pentagon match. They show Kenny coming down and everything like that, but they show this connection between them and how important that is. So it is a Kenny Omega doc, but it's also tied in with Kota Ibushi on this doc as well.
Yeah, and that's perfectly fine. And they, like I said, I really enjoyed this. They did a really good job, and this... Yeah, it's nice to see stuff like this. Yeah. And it's crazy to see Kenny doing all like the interview loop and all this bit of information and him talking about just the doc and everything. It's crazy to think that a guy that came out looking like a Street Fighter character at Wrestle Kingdom 9 or 10, whichever one it was, I think it was 9, to now being one of the biggest... was one of the biggest free agents in pro wrestling, and now is one of the executive vice presidents of a t-shirt company.
Yeah.
I kid, of course. AEW is great. It's crazy to think where this has landed, and where this, like, that small little beginning has led to this massive thing that I think a lot of wrestling fans, it matters to wrestling fans. Because not only does the Kota and Kenny story really matter, but it means that we're going to see stories like that in AEW. Because one of the things that Kenny said on in all his interviews was, I have full creative control.
Mm-hmm.
I get to be Kenny Omega. And the Kenny Omega we saw in this documentary, we're going to see again in AEW in different forms. The volume turned up by 10, but we're going to see Kenny Omega.
And why that works, when you hear creative control in the past for a wrestler, you think of Hogan in WCW, yeah. And you and Nash in WCW, you get terrified because of what that led to. With Kenny, you do not get terrified because you're like, you've seen it, what he could do in Japan with it, and you know that he's a generous wrestler, and that he's a smart wrestler, and that whatever he comes up with, being one of the creators of BTE with the Bucks, obviously the Bucks have more to do with it than Kenny did, but it's a creative decision with all three of them. You know whatever he does in the future is going to be a positive thing. And really, I don't know how much hands he really had in this documentary, but I thought the filmmaker in this did a tremendous job of telling all the bullet points you needed to do. And I also think a key to any movie is you want more. And a key to a doc, too, sometimes you finish a doc, it's like, oh, yeah, cool. And in this doc, like, I wanted more. I was maybe you could have touched on Tana. You could have touched an A&W. But I also feel like you didn't need to.
Yeah.
It's fine, he didn't.
It was very interesting that they did not end with the Tanahashi.
Say Kenny is now in All Elite Wrestling. They didn't say that.
I wonder if it was locked in before all those decisions were made.
Yeah.
But they did a good job. I definitely recommend it. Any wrestling fan or anyone that's interested in this crazy, wacky world. Like, there'll be times where we'll be on this podcast and it'll be like an hour and a half of like, what has happened? Believe me, you'll get that later this week.
Well, I felt, too, with the two docs that came up from other companies now, with HBO and ESPN, Andre left me wanting a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think the Andre doc is great, but there was things I wanted that I didn't get, and I felt pieces were left out.
For various reasons.
And then for Flair, I thought pieces were left out, and it was more establishing Flair as this, like, the man, like, this party guy, and how awesome he is. When I wanted more as far as the wrestler and mix of that story. And the same with Andre. I was like, I wanted a little bit more of Andre in there. And in this, I just they could have had the Elite story in there. They could have had the Jericho match. They could have had the Tana match. They could have had him, like AJ and him, and why that never happened. And they kind of meet each other in Japan after that great match there. They could have told all those stories. But it didn't really affect it as much to me. Whereas with Flair, there was stuff that I felt was missed out that I was like, kind of wish you guys had that 30 for 30. And with the Simmons doc, I know it's not just Bill Simmons, but he's one of the creative guys on it for HBO. And I fought with the Andre doc. I'm like, there's a few things in here. Maybe I'd want a little bit more. I don't know if you feel the same in those two docs, but
the one thing that will always stand out to me from the Andre doc is I don't remember the last thing I said to Andre. And then just the Vince McMahon blank stare of, like, you're not getting anything more from me. That's the one thing that stands out for that. Oh, and Hogan.
And Pat Patterson having the shirt on. And then the portrait of him wearing the shirt behind him.
The Flair one I thought was all right.
Andre's way better than the Flair.
Yeah.
Andre's a good doc. I don't think that Andre's a bad doc. I just think his ones that have been taken over by companies that aren't WWE or the wrestling company they're with this not being with New Japan Wrestling. I thought between ESPN doing the Flair, HBO doing Andre, and then Bell Media and TSN doing this one, I think the Bell Media and TSN did a tremendous job combining for this documentary and just telling the story, that the best story out there.
Oh yeah, I absolutely 100% agree. Yeah, I liked it. I highly recommend it.
I hope there's more stories. I hope going forward, if they do anything, like, I'd love to see something maybe on Edge and Christian. I don't know if they'll get that with WWE, but even something maybe with Jericho, I think, is a great story to tell.
Yeah.
Lance is a great story. Brett, obviously, is one to tell. Paul had kind of asked him, and as we get out of here, of how much cameras have followed around as this was a big... Because Paul said, this is another part of this documentary you could have done. You were the biggest free agent in wrestling for a year. And kind of like Wrestling with Shadows, he could have had the following. He's like, and Kenny's like, that obviously could have been a documentary that we could have done. We could have done a whole separate thing about building up to my free agency. Because these camera guys were with me that entire time. And they saw stuff and heard stuff that they could have put on film and done a whole other documentary on. And much like Wrestling with Shadows, that could have been captured. It wasn't. And we didn't do it, but it was interesting to see kind of the parallels of Brett at that time, kind of this greatest wrestler at this apex of his career, and then we know what happened.
Yeah.
And then Kenny obviously didn't have anything as similar, but I would have loved to have seen Kenny and then maybe the Tonna decision and how that affected things. And that could have been a whole different documentary. So I thought that was kind of interesting, the parallels of the camera crew that followed Brett for Wrestling with Shadows, and they never intended to have any of that. They just wanted to tell Brett's story.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'd love to see a documentary on All In.
Yeah.
I'd love to see.
I was saying that. Yeah, we were saying that.
And this is why, the current YouTube series, Road to Double or Nothing, I really enjoy. Because I feel like that's kind of a documentary series on.
Yeah.
But it has kayfabe to it.
To a degree, yeah, the Jericho stuff.
And by far, the best thing, and I want a screenshot of it, and I want to keep it, is the big, bold words kayfabe and then the meaning of kayfabe. It is by far the best thing that has come, one of the best things that came from this documentary.
Yeah. I also, before we get out, I love these kind of the anime, animation Splinter Cells.
Yeah.
Of kind of this fight feel and this anime feel. I like the way they told them. Then kind of when Okada's name popped up, it kind of was like a Tarantino situation. I thought that was a really cool overlay for that.
Yeah. Oh, they made Okada look like $1 million in this. They put him over huge.
Yeah. It's a 10 out of 10 for me, if we're already ranking it. I thought...
And it was in the Tokyo Dome, so
it was happen. In the Tokyo Dome. And shouts to Dave Meltzer's receding hairline.
Yeah.
the Brody shirt, by the way, was phenomenal by Dave. So, yeah, this was a really good doc, and I don't know who the culture editor was. I forgot to write down her name, but, I mean, if there's any chance she's ever looking at content and going over stuff, I thought she was phenomenal in this as far as a storyteller goes. I thought she did a really good job. And the last thing, too, is I like that they went and interviewed some fans.
Yes.
But it didn't feel like when WWE... Or like Ronda's YouTube show goes and interviews fans. It's like, yeah, I love that person. And they have like the Ronda shirt on or they have the WWE shirt on. It actually felt genuine. And I really appreciated that.
It felt as though these were real people. And like you saw a little bit of the autograph line for All In. And you see these kids coming up. You're my favorite wrestler. They just, you grab genuine real fans.
Mm-hmm.
Like you or me off the street. They just plucked them, had them interview, and then... That was it. And you got that genuine, real emotion from this.
I thought it was phenomenal. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the pod. Have you checked out Omega Man? What did you think about it? Send us a response on our Instagram at OneFallPod. And until next time, cheers.
I had something and now I lost it.
Bang and good night. Enjoy the day.
Goodbye. And good.